this morning is party versus party. You may approach. You may. Next case is party versus party. Good morning.
Good morning. John Ballew appearing for Cynthia Pardee. May it please the court and esteemed opposing counsel. This is a divorce case which originated in Gage County District Court. It concerns a farm divorce, 26-year marriage. The decree was entered by Judge Rick Schreiner after it's probably a long one-day trial. I think the case is important for this court because it's going to give you folks an opportunity to analyze the Stevens case in the context of a farming operation. As we all know, Stevens, when it was decided in 2017, was involving a construction business that Mr. Stevens owned, and then the White case that came along in 2020 concerned the issue of active appreciation in retirement and investment accounts. I'm not aware of any published or unpublished case yet to date that deals with the Stevens analysis, the active appreciation rule, the shifting burden of proof, and those related issues in the context of a farm.
What about the fact that in Stevens, the court abrogated Newkirk, Van Newkirk, which was a farm case, right?
Right, it was.
So does that not send a signal that the active appreciation and the burden of proof is going to apply to farm cases as well?
Oh, I think so. I absolutely do. And that's kind of the crux of my argument, is that it's Mr. Pardee's burden of proof here to show that the appreciation in this farming operation was passive. I mean, that's a huge deal. That's what Stevens was all about, the shifting of the burden of proof. I guess to summarize, our position is simply this. There is no way in a 26-year marriage where the assets are, as the term of art goes, inextricably intertwined, where a couple manages a farming operation together for 26 years. They buy and sell machinery. They buy and sell real estate. They pay off enormous amounts of debt. They operate out of one checking account. They sell a dairy herd. They do everything together. There's no way that if you start out with a net marital estate that Mr. Pardee had, which was not even $300,000, if you consider that Scully lease issue, which I won't go down that rabbit hole unless you want me to, but it was only $200,000 or $300,000 he started the marriage with. And if you look at his net equity in real estate at that time, it was less than $40,000. And we go ahead 26 years and we have this trial, and everybody agrees that the net equity in the marital estate was over $2 million. And my client gets $350,000 on a pickup truck. There is no way that you can square Stevens or the subsequent case, White, with that set of facts. And there's a reason why in the decree we don't discuss Stevens. What we discuss is case law that's 10 and 15 years old. And there's a reason for that. And the reason is simply you can't match this set of facts with the reasoning in the Stevens case.
So with regard to the increase in value of the real estate, then what would be necessary to show that it's passive beyond the testimony of the parties? Would you need a real estate appraiser or expert to testify about the increase in value?
Well, that's a great question.
And I know we don't have that evidence here, but
we struggle with that all the time. Mm-hmm. Recall that when Stevens first came out, it had some rather unfortunate language in it, and it was just one sentence, but it said, even favorable market conditions can constitute active appreciation. And that threw everybody in the trenches for a loop. And then White came along and they backed up that a little bit. And they did so because they received criticism from Brett Turner, whose treatise is used all the time by this court and Nebraska Supreme Court. They clarified that. But to your question, you would almost have to engage a real estate appraiser to come in and say, this ground that was only worth $60,000 in 1994 would now be worth two times that, even if nobody had gone out there and turned over a clod of dirt. Mm-hmm. We don't have that, and it's difficult to meet that burden, admittedly. But there isn't any evidence of that. What opposing counsel did, successfully, I might add, is convince the court that because he had a 30% increment of a piece of property that was equity, that transcends through the entire 26 years. And that's the fallacy here. And that's why the Stevens case did what it did. This couple started immediately operating this operation as the sole economic foundation of this marriage. And I think what's really interesting, and the court should look at this if you haven't already, is Exhibit 16. When you get into these cases, one of the things that is illuminating is bankers' notes. And we have the benefit of all sorts of notes from the First National Bank in Wahoo. And in virtually every entry, they're talking about the parties coming in, incurring more debt, selling property. Mrs. Pardee came into the marriage with a home. Within a year or two, they sold that, and her $104,000 went to pay off his debt, which included an $85,000 debt to his ex-wife. And time after time they came in, this couple was operating this as a partnership. It was a marital partnership farming operation, and there wasn't any effort by Mr. Pardee to create different buckets for different pieces of property. And that's the real problem here.
Counsel, I want to just go back briefly to the appreciation. This case, we don't even have Mr. Pardee's testimony that the increase in value was a result of market forces, do we? I mean, doesn't he just testify, this is what it's worth now?
Yeah.
Okay. Exactly. I just wanted to make, I mean, it's a big record. There's a lot of exhibits. I just wanted to make sure.
You're making my point again.
Well.
And that he admitted that all of this money just went back into the operation. He admitted it several times. And as I pointed out in the brief, there really isn't a big dispute about the facts here. I mean, the record is really quite clear. The facts are, we started with a couple hundred thousand, we ended up with $2 million. And for 26 years, they put all their effort into running this operation. And Mr. Pardee does admit, just like when he sold the dairy herd, it went back into the operation. When they sold the Rademacher place that he had at the time they got married, that money went back into the operation over and over again. And if you look at the amount of debt that this couple paid off, it's clear that this was nothing but the encapsulation of an economic unit for the benefit of the marriage.
So could the case be decided on the basis of commingling without addressing Stevens?
I think it could. Mm-hmm. I mean, our point made in the brief several times is that there has been commingling and inextricable interweaving of marital assets. And you can decide it on one of two or three things. It isn't equitable, first of all. And second of all, it doesn't square with Stevens, and it's been commingled. This is not it's not like a case where parties were married 4 years, 4 or 5 years. 26 years, long time to run a farming operation. And I don't know how the judge ended up doing what he did, but I think it's wrong in so many respects. And commingling is just another way of looking at this whole situation. I think I'm almost out of time, if not. Any other questions?
Actually, I do have one more question. Fertilizer plant, okay?
Yeah.
Would you agree that the record shows that that was a parcel of land owned by the husband prior to marriage and fully paid off prior to marriage?
I can't remember if it was fully paid off, but it was a premarital asset.
So
if it was subdivided into two parts, as I recall.
So for the part that remained, would you agree if it were fully paid off and it remains, what's left remains intact, does he not have some premarital value in that?
I would answer that question by saying, I'm not telling you that there is no increment of premarital value here somewhere. You don't have it in your record, but when I submitted our proposed findings to the court, I did recognize some. I'm not telling you that there is not some increment, whether it's there or it's in maybe the Leonard's tract, but the vast majority of this case involves the totality of this entire estate. And that, I think the fertilizer, let me answer your question this way. The Nardini case from Minnesota, which formed the backbone of the Stevens decision, had a quote in there at the end of the case where the Supreme Court of Minnesota said the premarital increment of some asset that is part of a long-term marriage loses most of its identity after that period of time in terms of the overall combined marital estate. And I think that's true here.
Thank you. How much time did we take Mr. Ballou over?
57 seconds.
Would you add a minute to Mr. Poppy's
Thank
time?
You.
Thank you.
That might not be a good idea.
Well, you know, you don't have to use it.
Your Honors, may it please the court. My name is Terry Poppy. I represent Arlen Pardee. Obviously, there are a lot of moving parts in this farm divorce. We have Scully leases. We have a truck operation. We have a dairy herd. And yeah, those are all moving parts. The one part that's not a moving part are the four pieces of real estate that really comprise the bulk of what these people own. And I would respectfully submit that Judge Schreiner got it right. The position that the appellant has taken from day one is that Arlen Pardee gets not $1 of credit for the Scully lease that was sold for $300,000 that he owned before the marriage, was sold for $300,000 during the marriage. He gets not $1 of credit for the sale of his dairy herd that he owned before the marriage. It was sold for $280,000 during the marriage. He gets not $1 of credit for a net worth of between $394,000 and $400,000 at the time of the marriage. He gets not $1 of credit for the home place, the fertilizer place and the home place are kind of the same, that he bought in 1981 for $91,000 and it was paid off at the time of the marriage. He gets not $1 of credit for that. He gets not $1 of credit for the Leonard's farm that was purchased 3 years before the marriage at a sheriff's sale that was owed, and there was $40,000 owed on that. No credit for that. He gets not $1 of credit for buying 160 acres from his mother for $80,000. And then his mother pays back all four of the children, $20,000 each after that. Gets no credit for that.
Didn't he just tell us that he's not saying there isn't any premarital value in this in these properties?
Didn't
he just say to us that he was not claiming that there was not any premarital value in this property?
I would submit to you that the position that they took with the trial court and the position they're taking with this court, there is no concession made to Mr. Pardee, none. And then there's the 1031 exchange. And I'll talk about that a little bit later, but he gets no credit for the 1031 exchange.
Let's talk a little bit about the burden of proof for premarital property. Okay, so that burden would be with your client, correct?
It would be.
Okay. Can you square Stevens, which basically tells us that if you want to claim appreciation as premarital property, you need to present some burden that it was, or you must present some evidence that it was passive and not active.
I would respectfully submit that Stevens is far different than this. Stevens is a construction company, and This man is in that construction company every day, hiring and firing and managing people. And that's far different than the appreciation that you have in this case, which is dirt. I mean, that's what it is.
But didn't Stevens abrogate Van Newkirk, which was a farm?
I don't agree that Stevens now mandates that, for instance, in a case like this, Mr. Pardee, and quite frankly, how you would do this, Your Honor, is beyond me. But to me, there is a significant difference between land and a business. And I suspect it is quite frankly impossible to have somebody come in and say, well, in 1994, when they were married, 26 years later, that piece of ground was 1,000 an acre. In 1995, it was 1,100. I mean, I think it is vastly different when you're comparing farm ground and real estate versus a business like Stevens and Smith Construction. I think there's a significant difference between the two.
Would you agree that appreciation in land can result either from passive just market forces, or it can result from active efforts?
I think that if there was, I don't know what you would have to do to some land other than build things, and there is no testimony that anything was built on any of this other than the home place. And the home place, they basically carved out 5 acres, built a $361,000 house. With the 5 acres, it was appraised at $386,000. So I think if you're building something, that's different. If you're out there planting corn and beans every year, you're not doing anything.
I suppose you could have a situation where somebody does some terracing or that kind of thing to agricultural real estate that would be an active effort to appreciate.
I think you could have that, Your Honor. And I can't remember all of Mr. Pardee's testimony, but the testimony was essentially he was the farmer. He was doing it all, but all he did was farm the ground.
Mm-hmm. But he also admitted that his wife assisted during those 26 years, didn't he?
She
so
did.
Setting aside Stevens, I'll ask you the same question as Mr. Ballew, is could this court determine it on the basis of commingling, that everything went into one account, that Mrs. Pardee signed all the promissory notes, helped pay off debt?
The problem with that approach is this, because that's what Mr. Ballew wants you to do. Well, we had a joint checking account. 26 years ago, we had a joint checking account, and we put everything in there. I would respectfully submit most couples do that. I mean, imagine in the top of the first inning in a marriage, you say, okay, we're not going to have a joint checking account. I said I do. I said I love you forever and ever. But by gosh, in the event that all this goes south, I'm setting up a joint checking account right now in my name. Most people are not going to do that. And just because you commingle, I think it is the Schumann case, if you take a non-marital asset and put it into your joint names, doesn't lose its non-marital status.
But we look at all the circumstances,
you look
right?
Yes, you do. And
well,
I'm not...
the court, though, I mean, assuming you're correct, that the court didn't buy the commingling, what about the $100,000 plus that the wife put in? Where's the credit for that in the court's order?
It was never asked for by the appellant in this case. They went on, their theory was something different, quite frankly. And I have to tell you, Your Honor, I don't remember the testimony for sure with respect to that. But what I know is it was not requested. It was not a theory that was placed in front of the court at that point in time. You know, the standard is, did he abuse his discretion? Did Judge Schreiner abuse his discretion? And it just, if you look at those four pieces of property, because that's the bulk, it's 80 to 90% of what we're arguing about. First of all, the home place was bought in 81, as I indicated. At the time of the marriage, it was paid off. It was appraised at $789,000. The appellant's position, $789,000 goes on the marital side. Our position, we built a house on the home place. That house is worth $361,000. That's the marital asset.
How do you separate the house from the 5 acres?
Well, the appraisal shows that the 100 acres that's left, originally it was 120 acres on the home place. Now there's 100 acres. That was $5,000 an acre. That was the value given to all of the land. The home place sits on 5 acres. So I took 386 minus 25,000.
But practically, when you're talking about commingled property, how do you separate the land and the house upon which it is built?
Well, but practically speaking, the court wasn't going to do, didn't have to do that anyway, because Mr. Party was going to get the home place. You know, I mean, the house has to be built on something. It's built on a 100-acre tract, 5 acres of which we're going to say is where the house is. With respect to the Leonard's property, that was purchased at sheriff's sale. He borrows $50,000 from his mother prior to the marriage. $40,000 was due at the time of the marriage. There, out of that 160 acres, only 36 acres is left. That 36 acres was appraised at $153,000. The appellant's position, $153,000 is a marital asset. Forget about the $300,000 we got from the sale of that property during the marriage. Our position, he owed $40,000 at the time of the marriage. It was in his name at the time of the marriage. It's still in his name. That's the marital quotient. That's the marital portion of Leonard's.
But on Leonard's farm, yes, he had that promissory note, but shortly after the marriage, didn't he have Mrs. Pardee sign a promissory note for that exact property? Didn't she incur the debt on that?
Sure, she incurred the debt on it.
So,
yes.
So what's her value for incurring the debt?
Well, the value was $40,000 was due on it at the time of the marriage that was paid off during the marriage. She also profited, quite frankly, substantially, because pieces of that were sold off during the marriage. Those pieces go into the farm operation. They do. We would still be in trial today if we had to go back 26 years and try to figure out. It would be impossible.
Because it's all commingled.
It is. It's commingled. But just because it's commingled doesn't mean that Mr. Pardee doesn't get the credit for all of that stuff that he had. Stuff's not a very good word, but all of that ground. And the ground is the key. And it was traceable, and we traced it. And Judge Schreiner agreed. He did not abuse his discretion. I see my time is gone.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
Your time has expired as well, Mr. Blue, right?
Yes, sir.
So thank you very much for your arguments today. Your case is submitted, and we are in recess. You are excused.
Thank you, Ron.
Thank you.